भगवान विश्व भावनः समासेन हरेर्नान्यात् अन्यस्मात् सत् असाच्छयात्। My dear son, I have now explained in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creator of the manifested worlds. Without him, Hari the Lord, there are no other causes of the phenomenal and nominal existences. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since we generally have the experience of the temporary material world and conditioned souls trying to lord it over the material worlds, Brahmaji explained to Narada Dev that this temporary world is the work of the external potency of the Lord, and that the conditioned souls struggling here for existence are the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. There is no cause for all these phenomenal activities but Him, Hari, the Supreme Lord, who is the primeval cause of all causes. This does not mean, however, that the Lord Himself is distributed impersonally. He is aloof from all these interactions of the external and marginal potencies. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that by His potencies alone, He is present everywhere and anywhere. Everything that is manifested rests on His potency only. But He, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always aloof from everything. The potency and the potent are simultaneously one and different from one another. One should not deprecate the Supreme Lord for the creation of this material world, just as one should not blame the king for creating a prison house in the government. The prison house is a necessary institution of the governmental establishment for those who are disobedient to the laws of the government. Similarly, this material world, full of miseries, is a temporary creation of the Lord for those who have forgotten Him and are trying to lord it over the false manifestation. He, however, is always anxious to get the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. And for this, He has given so many chances to the conditioned souls via the authoritative scriptures, His representatives, and personal incarnations also. Since He has no direct attachment to this material world, He is not to be blamed for its creation. Narrating the wonderful pastimes of the Lord's various principal incarnations, Lord Brahma has established the supreme sentient nature of the Absolute Truth. Those who do not have the complete comprehension of the Shastric conclusions declare that the Absolute Truth, has no eternal form, because the forms and the variegated phenomena of this world are temporary, and ultimately they bring about misery. So if the Absolute Truth is to be Satchidananda, full of bliss, he cannot have a form. He cannot have a personality. He must be altogether different than what we experience in this world of death, misery. But they do not understand. Their idea is that the Lord temporarily takes on certain personal qualities only when he comes within the three modes of material nature. But when he comes out again from this material cosmos after fulfilling the purpose of the particular avatar, then he gives up. He sets behind all the variegated forms of matter which compose his form, his personality, his names, his pastimes, his everything. But Srimad Bhagavatam, here Brahma, who is the greatest authority of anyone within this universe, he has direct access from the Supreme Lord to the Vedic knowledge. And he is explaining how the form of the Lord is eternal, and how when the Lord descends in his various incarnations, it is not a temporary manifestation of something impersonal, but rather it is the descent of an eternal person from the eternal abodes of Vaikuntha. There is a Vaikuntha planet for each of the principal incarnations of the Lord, and the Lord descends from those planets through the via medium of Kirodakshayi Vishnu to perform his pastimes in this material world. And it is that Absolute Truth who is the source, the cause of all causes. And the Jivatma that is presently suffering within this material existence must be understood properly in order to liberate it from such clutches of death. Therefore, we find amongst the Vaishnavacharyas, each one very, very meticulously, systematically, in great depth, explains what is the soul, the Atma, the Jivatma. And each one goes to various levels of depth. Shankaracharya was actually the avatar of Lord Shiva, who especially came into this Kali Yuga for the purpose of, one, to drive out the nihilistic conceptions of the Buddhists, who accepted not at all the authority of the Shastra. We understand that the highest and most perfect form of receiving knowledge is Shruti, to hear from the Shastra submissively. And if you cast away the Shastra, then there is no standard, there is no authority anymore to base our arguments or to base our philosophy or lifestyle upon. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, those who disregard the injunctions of the scriptures, they are doomed in this world and the next. We must accept the authority of the scriptures. But because the scriptures were so grossly misused by materialistic people with ulterior motives, the whole conception of the scriptures was perverted. And therefore Buddha, out of his great mercy, he was also a Shaktivesh avatar, he discarded the scriptures. and he taught ahimsa, nonviolence. And he taught a path toward inner peace and prosperity through meditation, through good deeds, through charity and so forth. And of course, detachment. Detachment from material sense gratification. Shankaracharya was so expert that he understood the condition of human society at the time, that to try to change all the conclusions in the minds of the people in general would be unacceptable. So he essentially took the same conclusion of the Buddhist philosophers, but he gave its authority on the basis of scripture. And he called it Brahman. Instead of Nirvishesh, he called it Brahman. But it was, in definition, the same as the void of the Buddhists. But by doing so, he encouraged the whole of India to again have faith that the Vedas is the word of God and that is the authority. What the Vedas say is truth. And what is against the conclusions of the Vedas is false. And it is the only standard of truth. In all the great religions of the world, in their original state, this is accepted. Whatever their scripture may be, that is the revealed truth. It cannot be argued, cannot be debated. It is the fact. So Shankar very strongly established this, and this was his great contribution. But at the same time, as the mysterious avatar of Lord Shankar, he had many, many purposes for this incarnation. And one was to propagate the fallen condition of Kali Yuga. Because ultimately, his conclusion was that service is an illusion. And the servant is an illusion. And the person you are serving is an illusion. Everything is an illusion. Everything is Maya. Therefore, Mayavadi, proponent of illusion. Ramanujacharya appeared in this world. And he also understood, according to time and circumstance, what had to be done. He actually gave great credit to Shankar, in one sense. But at the same time, he established that ultimately God is a person, and ultimately service is eternal, the servant is eternal, and the object of service is eternal. And this was his great contribution. He established that it is not through jnana or karma, but only through bhakti, that you can reach the grace of the eternal. And only if that grace is bestowed upon you by the Supreme Personality of Godhead can we be delivered from the clutches of illusion. That Narayan is transcendental to this material existence. And he is a body that is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And he is an abode called Vaikuntha. And in that abode, there are unlimited, variegated personalities who are all alive with eternal forms, who are serving the Lord with unmotivated love and devotion. The two aspects of Ramanujacharya's teachings that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu most appreciated was one, that he taught pure bhakti without any tinge of jnana or karma. What does that mean? Karma means action. Jnana means knowledge. How can you have bhakti without activity and without understanding? Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayodacha Janayatya Shuvairavyam Jnanam Chayadahoitakam. Bhakti in its pure state contains perfect karma and perfect jnana, but not according to the khandhas that the Vedas teach for those who are less intelligent. What he is kicking out is that karma or activity which is meant for attaining some material benefits, whatever it may be, whether it be health or wife or husband or children, for material purposes, or elevation to heavenly planets, or victory over one's competitors. This is all the path of fruitive activities. He kicked it out. And gyan means speculative knowledge for the purpose of liberation. In bhakti, there is knowledge and there is activity, but it is all pure, untinged by these motivations. It is only for the pleasure of the Lord. It is only for the service of the Lord. And Ramanujacharya very strongly kicked out the karmakanda and the jnanakanda and taught specific and exclusive devotion. And he presented his arguments with such logic, everything based so systematically and so purely on the scriptures, the revealed scriptures, the Sribhasya. He established his philosophy according to the Vedanta Sutra. He also propagated Ramayana, the Vedas, the Upanishads. And in this way, he elevated people to understand that you accept the Vedas, you must accept Narayan as supreme. And you must accept service to the Lord as supreme path. And the other aspect that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much appreciated from Ramanujacharya's teachings was service to the Vaishnavas. In Ramanujacharya's life and in the lives of his followers, we find this is the prominent theme of their sadhana, is service to the Vaishnavas. Without service to the Vaishnavas, we cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, Ramanujacharya, in his explanation of the soul of Bhagwan and of material nature, he made certain compromises with Shankar's philosophy in order for people to be willing to hear and to accept. But he brought people to that level. But then came the advent of Madhvacharya. He would not compromise. He actually criticized. He offered all respects to Ramanujacharya. That this Ramanujacharya, such a great Param Vaishnav he was. But according to time and circumstance, he compromised with the Advaitavadis. I cannot. I must kick it out. And he was very strong. We heard about the strength of Madhvacharya yesterday. When he kicks, no one can withstand such a kick, whether it's physical, philosophical, or on any level. So he taught Dvaita, where he very, very strongly established the soul's individual existence separate from Krishna, as a part of Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much appreciated two aspects of Madhvacharya's teachings. One was that he worshipped the deity of Krishna with such love and such devotion, and also with so much concern and care. And he also very much refuted the theory of illusion or the Mayavad idea, stronger than anyone had ever done before. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refined and presented the most perfect and clear understanding of the soul's relationship with the Paramatma. He extracted it from the Vedas like no one had ever extracted it before. Madhvacharya explains that the soul is part and parcel of God, but he doesn't go into how it is part and parcel of God to the extent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, we are not only part and parcel of God, But we are a separate energy from God. There are three energies. There is the spiritual energy, there is the marginal energy, and there is the material energy. And how the soul is not simply God, but is the energy of God. Not just a part of God, but a part of God that is manifested as His energy. His tatastha shakti. And as an energy, He is always under the control of one of these other two energies, either the material energy or the spiritual energy. The soul cannot, nor has he ever been able to, nor ever will, approach God directly. You cannot. It's not your constitution to approach God directly. You are the energy of the Lord. You must approach through energy. And therefore, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, we find this very, very unique, perfect, and highest conception that Srimati Radharani is the Hladini Shakti. She is the pleasure potency of Godhead. She is the source of actually all energies. She is energy herself. She is the Godhead in the form of His, non-different from Himself, but as energy, pleasure potency. Potency means energy. And you cannot approach Krishna, save and except through coming under the control of the jurisdiction of Srimati Radharani. There is no other way. And therefore the whole spiritual world, Vrindavaneshwari, is working under her control. And in the Vaikunthas, she takes the form of Lakshmi. But for those who do not want to surrender to the will of the divine energy, the pleasure potency of the Lord, through devotion, through surrender, through humility, and through love, then that same pleasure potency, the spiritual energy, casts that jivatma into her own existence in another form. And that is the material energy. Material energy, Srimati Radharani, manifests herself as Durga or Parvati, an expansion of her own self. But under this energy, the jiva is first cast down into illusion and then remains covered. How remains covered? There are these three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And we are endlessly being controlled by these three modes of material nature. And we can't get out. Daivi heshu gunamayi mama maya durotyaya mame vamye prabhadyante mayame thartarantite. These three modes of material nature are like ropes. And we have been tied by these ropes birth after birth after birth after birth after birth, and now you can't even see yourself. You're just wound up by ropes. Just like if somebody just starts winding ropes around you for 100 years. All there is ropes. You can't see through the ropes. No one else can see through the ropes. It's just ropes. That's what we have become. We have just, by mingling and consorting with Maya, by trying to enjoy the influences of goodness, passion, and ignorance, we have become so much entangled, so much under control, that our natural consciousness is completely obscured by the power of these three modes of material nature. And this is all being conducted by the material energy of the Lord. So therefore, the jivatma, achintya bheda bheda tattva, although it is simultaneously one with the Supreme and also different, it is the energy of the Supreme, and it is always in connection under the subordination of an energy, either the material energy or the spiritual energy. So bhakti is the spiritual energy of the Lord. And sense gratification is the material energy of the Lord. Every time we engage in sense gratification, what are we doing? We are putting ourselves more under the grip, the grasp, the control of material energy. Every time we detach ourselves from personal sense gratification and we engage our mind, our body, our words, our life in trying to serve the Lord, trying to be enjoyed by the Lord, then we are putting ourselves under the control of the spiritual energy. Ultimately, the soul is exploited. It's a question of whether you want to be exploited by Krishna or exploited by Maya. Exploited by Krishna is a very positive thing. That means we are simply an instrument of his will. That's what bhakti means. No separate interest except to be an instrument of his will. I am his energy, I am meant for his satisfaction. Sarva dharman puritya jamame kam sharanam braja. Whatever you want, my Lord, let your will be done. In the Christian faith, one of the greatest, most powerful supports of their faith is when their Savior, Lord Jesus Christ, was praying. He understood he would be crucified. And crucifixion is a very terrible, painful situation. And he was praying to the Lord, please, if this can be avoided, let it be avoided. Because a devotee has to try to somehow take care of his body and keep body and soul together as far as possible. He said, this cup that you are giving me, if you please take it away, this bitter cup of the beverage of suffering through crucifixion. But then his ultimate surrender was revealed through his next prayer. He said, but my Lord, let your will be done. Whatever you want, let it be. That is my desire. That means he surrendered himself to be an instrument of the will of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed in this way. Ashlisyava padratam panashtumam madarshanam marmahatam karotuva yatadatata vridatu lambato mat prananatastu se evanaparaha. My Lord, whatever you like, you do with me, because I am your servant. Manaso deho geho jokichu mor, that beautiful song by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He is praying, my body, my mind, my words, my home, my wealth, my everything. It is your property, Krishna. It is not mine. It is meant for your pleasure. It is not meant according to my conceptions of what I want. That is surrender. If you want, you can save me. If you want, you can kill me. I don't mind. I am simply here for your satisfaction eternally. To live for the enjoyment of the Lord. To live and to die as an instrument of the pleasure of the Lord is bhakti. And this is what the great Vaishnavacharyas are teaching us that we should strive for in our life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught in his philosophy of Achintya Veda Veda Tattva that although we are one with God and simultaneously different from God, all emphasis is on the difference. Philosophically, we understand we are constitutionally and qualitatively one with the Lord, but all emphasis is on the difference. Why? Because it is the distinction between the jivatma as the marginal energy of the Lord, infinitesimal by nature, that gives it a relationship with the Lord. And in the spiritual world, no one cares about their oneness with God. Everyone is simply concerned with their relationship with God. The cowherd boys are serving Krishna. Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, they are engaged in the service of the Lord with such pure love. And the gopis, they are experiencing the paramount of transcendental ecstasy in their service of the Lord. But in order for there to be service, there must be the servant, the served, the object of service, and service. That means three distinctions must be there. We must be conscious of them. And therefore, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimbarkacharya, Vishnu Swami, Balabhacharya, all these great personalities put all emphasis on the distinction, the difference between the soul and God. And that service is really what brings us. Service is our constitutional nature. Dharma means that which cannot be separated from our own existence. The dharma of sugar is sweet. The dharma of water is liquidity. The dharma of fire is heat. This is the natural quality. It can be artificially changed for some time, perhaps, but when it's in its natural environment, water must become liquid. So similarly, the dharma, the Sanatana Dharma of every Jivatma is to serve, to be subordinate, to be dependent on something higher than itself. We are eternal servants. Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. And this process of service is the process by which we either serve the material energy or the spiritual energy. But we are always a servant. The impersonalist conception of mukti means that our constitutional nature of servant is temporarily forgotten. It is like a deep sleep. But eventually, the soul has to awaken to its nature, and it wants to serve. It wants to find pleasure through service. And if we do not understand the higher service of the spiritual realm, then we must come back again to this realm of exploitation, the material world. So we must understand that service to our senses, service to our minds, service to the conceptions of others within this world is all the path of darkness, entanglement, bondage. And service to God, service to His devotees, as prescribed by the Lord Himself, is the path of liberation, the path of truth, the path of real bliss. Today being the disappearance day of Sri Ramanujacharya, there's a beautiful narration you have all heard, but how many times we can hear it and awaken deeper appreciation for what the standard of a real devotee is. Because as the Lord reveals His greatness through His devotees, similarly, those great personalities also reveal through their own devotees the true teachings that they propagate to the world. Sripad Ramanujacharya was so strongly preaching that devotion to Vishnu is the ultimate path of the Vedas. But many materialistic people, they worship the demigods for materialistic purposes, or at the most for an impersonal conception of liberation, which is really an expression of envy toward God. We don't want to serve God, we want to be God. It is kicked out by real Vaishnavas. So Ramanujacharya was becoming so prominent. And there was a king. His name was Kolutunga. He lived in near Kanchipuram. And this king was a Shivite. Now, Vaishnavas have nothing against Shivites if Shivites are actually doing the will of Shiva. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Shiva is actually an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the real path that he has revealed in Padma Purana is that if you worship Vishnu, that is more dear to me. And if you worship his devotees, that is most dear to me. And therefore we find Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and other great personalities, even Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, they would worship Lord Shiva. But to achieve bhakti, to achieve eternal servitude to Godhead. But others, they worship Shiva for power. Ravana was a worshipper of Shiva. Vrikasura was a devotee of Shiva. They were getting all kinds of benedictions simply for their own exploitative purposes. And so many are smoking the Ganga, the Chilam, and doing all sorts of tantric rites. In this way, they're simply using the name of Shiva for their own material purposes. But the Vaishnavas, of course, some people do that also, Sahajyas. They also take the name of Krishna or Vishnu for their own materialistic purposes. So this particular king, he considered that unless the whole world becomes Shivites, the world is doomed. And he considered that Ramanujacharya was like the blind leading the blind. They're all falling into the ditch of pure devotional service. He didn't like it. It was against his own prestige. So he was a very selfish and envious person. And when he saw that Ramanujacharya's influence was growing, it was expanding in all directions. Everyone was becoming devotees of the Lord, chanting the holy names of the Lord, accepting the position of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. This is terrible. What will become of the world if everyone becomes a humble servant? Of course, the king was thinking, if they become humble servant of me, then everything's all right. But humble servant of God? Not like that. So he was very much envious and very angry. And he made a plot. There was one of his ministers. And this minister told him that actually, if you kill Ramanujacharya, then everyone will become Shivites. Everyone will follow you. But as long as he's there, no one can defeat him. So we either have to defeat him by debate and force him to accept your God as God, or we must kill him. It's the only hope for the salvation of the world. So the king was thinking, yes, this is correct. So he sent some soldiers to Srirangam, where Sri Ramanujacharya had his base. And they were coming, actually in the guise of very nice people, calling to invite him to come and see the king. So Ramanujacharya, he was thinking, oh, very nice, the king wants to see me. So the message came that we will give you a personal escort to come to see the king. So he prepared everything, he was ready to go see the king. But one of his devotees, whose name was Kuresh, he was a grihastha. He had two children and a wife. Kuresh, he could understand with his good intelligence that actually they want to kill my guru. So he approached Ramanujacharya, who is just making the last arrangements for his trip, he said, Guru Maharaj, please do not go, because these people are very envious and very violent, and they will try to defeat you in a debate, and if they do not defeat you, they will murder you. And the whole hope of mankind's liberation is in your teachings. You are a pure devotee. You are teaching the highest truths. You are the Acharya, the Jagadguru. We need you. The world will be plunged in darkness without the sun of your radiant mercy. I am insignificant. I am just your insignificant servant. Whether I live or die will make no difference to the world. But all of your tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of followers are depending on you. So please, let me go in your place and give my life for you. The soldiers had already come. How to escape? He told Ramanuja that you take the white robes that I am wearing of a grihastha, and they will think that you are me, and I will put on your saffron sannyasi garments, and they will think that I am you. And you escape, and I will go with them. One of Ramanuja's prominent gurus was named Mahapurna. He was very old at the time, and he was also a great learned scholar. And the king understood he must get Ramanuja and Mahapurna both. Mahapurna, they wanted him to escape also. He said, I'm too old to go playing these escape pastimes. I'm old. I've given my life to the service of Vishnu. I'm prepared to die any way Vishnu wants me to die. Let me just go. So Ramanujacharya put on, he heard his disciple, who was so willing to give his life for his guru, that Ramanujacharya had to agree. He said, yes, this is your desire. I will fulfill your desire. So Ramanujacharya took off his sannyasi robes and dressed as a grihastha and very secretly left. And then his other disciples, they also left, and they met him sometime later. And Quraysh, in the robe of Ramanujacharya, along with Mahapurna, were escorted to the kingdom. And when the king met, he actually very respectfully greeted them with kind words. He arranged nice accommodations, nice everything for them. He was trying to charm them. Materialists can be very respectful and very accommodating and very sweet and charming and distinguished in the way they try to please you. But it is with their own motivations. It is not at all ahoitaki apratihata. They are simply doing it. They are not serving you. You are just an extension of their own ego. They are serving their own ego through you as long as you can serve their purposes. But if you do not serve their purposes, they want nothing to do with you. So with very, very kind words, very affectionate, externally, he greeted who he thought was Ramanujacharya and Mahapurna. And after they settled in their quarters, he asked them a question. What is the ultimate duty of life? And Quraysh wanted history to know who Ramanujacharya was. Therefore, he was bold. He was taking the place as Ramanuja's representative, and what he spoke would be seen as the words of his guru. He could have spoke very diplomatically. He knew the consciousness of this king, who asked him, what is the highest duty of life? He said, to worship Vishnu is the only duty of life. Everything else is maya. Vishnu is the supreme personality of Godhead, and to surrender to him through love and devotion is the ultimate goal of life. And when he said that, the king became furious. He went in a tantrum of anger. He began to yell and to shout and to threaten. And Quraysh and Mahapurna just continued to expound the glories of Lord Vishnu. So then he brought the greatest of the pundits and said, I want you to hear from them. He didn't want them to debate with them. He said, I want you to hear. I am explaining. And if you don't, I will kill you. So these pundits began to speak, and everything they spoke, Mahapurna and Quraysh effortlessly started defeating and exposing as illusion. And the pundits were exasperated, and they came together with the king and said, these men are so dangerous. They are so dangerous. They must be killed. But years, when Ramanujacharya was a young boy, and this king was a prince, his sister was once ghostly haunted. And all the great Mayavadis came to try to, Yadava Prakash and others, to try to get this ghost out of this little girl. But they couldn't do it. But then Ramanujacharya was called, and he just chanted the holy name of Vishnu and told the ghost to go away. And the ghost left, and the girl was all right. So this king was thinking, I cannot kill him because my sister will not be happy. He saved her life. So he decided that we will pluck out your eyes and torture you. And when Quraysh heard this, he was ecstatic that he was going to be given the precious opportunity of sacrificing his eyes for the service of his Guru Maharaj. He was happy. He was anxious. Do anything. So first they beat them and tortured them, humiliated them in so many ways they tried to do. And then ultimately, in a very violent and cruel way, they tore out their eyes. They blinded them. And after Quraysh was blinded, very painful, he just turned toward those who just blinded him, the soldiers, and with folded hands, he said, may Lord Narayan bless you for so kindly engaging me in such a wonderful service to my Guru Maharaj, of giving my eyes for him. And he was blessing them. Their hearts melted. Who is this person? We have beat him, we have spit upon him, we have blinded him, and he is praying the God to bless us. So they became a little humble. And they decided, they found some people and gave them money and told them, take him back to Sri Rangam. So Quraysh went back to Sri Rangam, and he was very, very happy. Actually, they were on the way. Mahapurna, just by being beaten and tortured and blinded, he was so old. On the road, he just lay down and he told Quraysh that it is now the time for me to go back to Godhead, to just put my life completely at the feet of Lord Narayan. Please tell my disciple, Ramanujacharya, that I offer my prostrated obeisances at his lotus feet. He was formerly his guru, but he understood the power of his disciple. And he said, please offer my obeisances, of my millions of dandavats, at the lotus feet of my disciple, Ramanujacharya. And then with the name of Lord Hari in his tongue and in his heart, he gave up his body and went back to the spiritual world. And meanwhile, Quraysh, he was called to where Ramanujacharya was in exile. By that time, the king, because of his offense, He got a terrible disease, and he suffered miserably and died. And his son, later on, became a disciple of Sripad Ramanujacharya and became a Vaishnava and made his whole kingdom devotees of Vishnu. So when Quraysh, he went to meet Ramanujacharya, and when Ramanujacharya saw how he was beaten and how he was blind and how he was so happy, there was just tears of love for his disciple. And Ramanujacharya said, you should go to Kanchipuram. The principal deity is that of Vishnu. His name is Bharadraj. He said, you go and you pray to Bharadraj to give you your eyes back. He will give you your vision. So Quraysh went to Bharadraj's temple in Kanchipuram, and he began to pray. He was actually so happy. He was so happy that he was allowed this most sacred, precious, and rare service of giving his eyes for his guru, just to protect his guru. And he was so anxious and happy to have been killed for his guru. But somehow or other, that desire was not fulfilled by the arrangement of the Lord. This is service. This is actually what a devotee is. One who simply wants to be used for the will and the enjoyment of the Supreme as the servant of the servant of his servant. This should be our aspiration. Not to get some position, not to get some fame or glory, not to get some facilities. We will do these things, but our aspiration is simply to be utilized for the will of the Lord. To be a puppet, to perform the fulfillment of the Lord's desire through our life. To live, to die, to suffer, it doesn't matter. But let it be for your service, my Lord. That is a devotee. And to the degree we have any ulterior motives, to that degree we are not really devotee. We were speaking the other day where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was explaining, what is a servant? Servant is such a high position. We easily say, I am your servant. But to actually be servant means like Quraysh. That is servant. Servant means our entire existence is for the pleasure and according to the will of the object of our service. And to the degree we have any tinge of condition, we are not really a servant. So Quraysh went to the temple of Bharadraj in Kanchipuram. And it was his guru's order that he pray for a benediction. So the first benediction he prayed for was that minister... Actually, that minister at one time was Quraysh's disciple. And he abandoned his guru. He became completely blasphemous, offensive. He became the minister of the king, and he's the one that actually convinced the king to kill Ramanujacharya and thus torture and blind Quraysh. I think his name was Chatragram or something. So he prayed to Bharadraj, please, my Lord, give your divine mercy to the minister of the king. And that was all. That was the only benediction he asked for. So he came out of the temple. He was still blind. Ramanujacharya heard. He said, please, go back. Ask the Lord for a benediction. And Bharadraj Muni would talk to him. Bharadraj Murti. He said, what benediction? I will give you any benediction you like, the Lord said. Please ask. And Quraysh went back, second time on the order of his guru, and he said, please give your supreme mercy to the king. And the Lord said, all right, I will give my mercy to the king. And then Quraysh left again. He was still blind. He would never ask for anything for himself. He was only asking for the benefit of others. So this news came to Ramanujacharya again. Every time he was sending him for a benediction, he was asking for benedictions for someone else. He would never ask anything for himself. That is a servant. That is a Vaishnava. So Ramanujacharya used his transcendental divine intelligence and he sent a message to Quraysh. And he said, you are very selfish. You are a very selfish person. He said, because you have surrendered your body to me, and every part of your body is mine, and I want to use them in my service, in God's service. And you are selfishly abusing my property and not using it properly. So it is my order to you that you ask the Lord to return not your eyes, but my eyes. Because he knew he wouldn't ask anything for himself. But your eyes belong to me. So you ask for those, for my eyes, so that I can use them. So with that understanding, he was chastised by his guru. Quraysh became ecstatic that the Lord, my Guru Maharaj, Sri Ramanujacharya, by his message, that means he has accepted me as his surrendered servant. He has accepted my body, my life, my words, my everything to be his own. This is the perfection of my life. And he went before the deity of Bhardraj and he spoke. He said that there are two items that belong to my spiritual master that somehow or other I lost them. But if it is your desire, please return them so they can be used in the service of my spiritual master. And upon saying that, he fell into such a state of ecstasy that he went into a trance. And then when he came to consciousness, he could see. He had his eyes returned. 20/20 vision. Perfect vision. Not only could he see perfectly the material world through his eyes, but he was actually able to see Krishna everywhere through his eyes. He had divine vision. Why? Because he had surrendered his life as the servant of the servant of the Lord. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochane na santasa daiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. My dear son, actually, and then Ramanujacharya, when he heard this, he became very happy. He embraced Quraysh with great love and affection. This is reciprocation. And it is this form of devotional reciprocation which every soul is longing to achieve. And by following the principles given by the spiritual master, the previous acharyas, and the scriptures, this most precious benediction is available to all of us. However, we must, within our life, make our priorities. because it is so easy to justify satisfying our false ego, satisfying our senses. It is so easy to justify it, but we must be carefully on guard. If we actually want the treasure of our heart, the realization of pure devotion, we must sincerely strive and make the focus of our goal in life to be an instrument of the will of the Lord. To not be the enjoyer, but to be enjoyed. We have this body is temporary, it will die at any moment. And everything connected to this body is temporary and it will be lost any moment. To try to hold on to these things for our own personal separate interests is a great illusion. It's what's keeping us away from God. In our ego and our prestige, it's going to be taken away either in this life or in the next. So hold on to these things. For what? Why? It is phantasmagoria. It is will-o'-the-wisp. We should hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna. We should give this life for Krishna. That is service. My dear son, I have now explained in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creator of the manifested worlds. Without him, Hari the Lord, there are no other causes of the phenomenal and nominal existences. Is there any questions? Yes.
As you said that Kuresh asked for two items I have lost on behalf of my guru. The one item you said that he got his eyes back. What was the another one, Prabhu?
He has two eyes.
So there were two items. Two eyes.
He had two eyes, yes. He asked for each one of them.
Maharaj, you said that a pure Vaishnava never accepts that he is God. But we can accept that Ramanujacharya was a great Acharya, so we accept him as Vaishnava. But one who is following this philosophy of non-dualism, still we call them as Vaishnavas. And you said that those who follow the philosophy of non-dualism, that is Advaitvada, so still we accept them as Vaishnavas.
Who?
One who are following Ramanujacharya's philosophy of...
He was a Vaishnav.
But he taught non-dualism.
No, he didn't. He taught the distinction between the soul and God. But in a qualified manner, according to time and circumstance. But he very strongly established that Vishnu is the Supreme Godhead and we are his eternal servants. Yes?
The Mayavadis also accept that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Sachit Ananda. So how do they accommodate the fact that it is impersonal and still Ananda? How can something impersonal be a source of bliss?
It cannot. Their conception of Ananda is freedom from misery. Just like Srila Prabhupada used the example of sometimes you punish a person by putting his head under the water and he's miserable, and then you take his head out of the water for a few seconds, and that's Ananda. Ananda means it's not so miserable. So real Ananda, they have no conception of. Real Ananda means love, the ecstasy of loving relationship. Coming in contact with the source of all Ananda, Krishna. But certainly, after suffering the pleasures and the joys of this material world for millions and millions of births, to finally be relieved of it is Ananda. It's like you're a doctor. If somebody has a serious, terrible, painful boil, and it's just causing such excruciating misery, and then you somehow lance the boil and take the pus out, for him it's like Ananda. Right? Ah, now I can enjoy. But it is not real Ananda.
But their highest conception is they want to commit spiritual suicide, what Prabhupada says, suicide, annihilate their existence. But even that, the soul cannot be annihilated, that feeling of being annihilated and becoming one with Brahman is also actually an illusion. So even that is an illusion, that they think that we have become one with God and be there in the Brahma Jyoti. So ultimately they become a particle of that individual particle and come back again and do some material activities. So even that merging is an illusion actually, is it not?
It is a state of complete forgetfulness of one's spiritual identity. As long as you're in this material world and you have that type of realization, you may think I am God. But when you actually merge into the Brahma Jyoti, you don't think you're God. You don't think you're anything. You don't think. You just exist. So actually, it is not suicide in the sense of the annihilation of the soul. It is suicide in the sense it is the annihilation of the eternal instincts of the soul temporarily. In other words, suicide in that we temporarily kill our natural instincts for service and for love. Suicide and we forget our identity. And in once for a devotee, it's impersonal liberation is like prison, because you go for a long sentence. You may be merged in that Brahma Jyoti for trillions of years before you fall again to the material existence, where you have a chance to again develop bhakti. Therefore, Prabodhananda Saraswati said, "Kaivalya nara kayate." Better to be in hell. At least there you can try to purify your life through devotion. And you can serve the Lord. Yes?
Maharaj, you said that Ramanujacharya compromised with Shankaracharya in Ramanujacharya compromised in some ways with Shankaracharya. So can you please explain in what way, in what sense he...
That's a very long subject. That's a very long subject. But he essentially accepted, he defeated Shankaracharya. But in principle, he gave credibility to many aspects of Shankaracharya's explanations of the oneness between the soul and God, which Madhvacharya felt was too much of a compromise. So he just cut it very strongly. But he was a pure Vaishnava. Essentially, the conception of the soul between Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most refined, perfect, and completely explained in relationship to the energies of the Lord. It answers every possible question. Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya, according to time and circumstance, they explained it in slightly different ways. But the principle is exactly the same. The essential principle that we are eternal servants of the Lord, we can never become God, and we can only achieve God through bhakti, through devotion. That is identical. But the very technical, philosophical, theological explanations in detail of the soul's relationship with the Supreme Soul are slightly variegated between these acharyas. And why? Because there was a systematic evolution. from Shankaracharya, if Ramanujacharya didn't teach it this way, he could not have established bhakti on the basis of the Vedas. Because the whole society accepted Shankar as the only authority. So he had to give a certain credibility to his teachings, but then raise people to the higher standard. And once that was established, then Madhva came and just said, forget Shankar. Just forget it. And he worshipped the feet of Ramanujacharya. But he understood, according to time and circumstance, he compromised in certain ways on a philosophical level. But in principle, the path of bhakti is the same. But he said, now according to time and circumstance, it must be cut. So he was so busy cutting that he didn't really explain things in its most perfect form, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, which we have just explained. They were saving that for God himself. They were all servants of God. Ramanujacharya is a servant of the Lord. Madhvacharya is a servant of the Lord. They wanted the ultimate conclusions to be presented by the Lord himself. So they also, even Shankaracharya served his purpose. He's also a servant of the Lord.
Following impersonalism. Like, Even today people are following impersonalism.
I can't hear a word you're saying. Put the microphone. If you're not Krishna, or all of your limbs can perform the functions of all your other limbs, you have to put the microphone close to your mouth.
Maharaj, but even today people are following impersonalism. So while telling them about Krishna, like sometimes it is said that you should not hurt their feelings or like belief. So you should tell them to continue whatever they are doing, and simultaneously they should do like Krishna consciousness activities. So while preaching to these people, what we should do, like if they are impersonalists, so should we tell them to continue whatever they are like doing, and simultaneously read like and follow the Krishna consciousness?
We should not tell them to be impersonalists. We should tell them what is bhakti. That's all. You have no right to tell them to be impersonalists. You tell them what is bhakti. If they are attached to their impersonal conceptions, you just try to elevate them higher, but you don't have to encourage them to do the wrong thing. You try to build that bridge for them. How can you tell a person to be envious of God? How can you have the heart to do that? You may tolerate it. You may somehow, but you will not instruct them to do it. Please add this. Add this, add this, add this. But don't encourage them to do something that's not right. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that if a person's in the path of fruit of action and they have some faith in God, you should not break that faith in God. But you don't encourage it either. Let them be what they are, but encourage them to come higher. But don't start praising what they're doing. Do you understand? If a person is an impersonalist and you want to bring them to a higher platform, either you should expose them and bring them to that, but if they're too much in that conception, then you just encourage them to do something more, bhakti. But don't put them in further illusion to think what you're doing is good.
So we should not tell them to like continue whatever they are doing. Because
it depends what they're doing. What are they doing?
I met one girl.
Huh?
I met one girl. So she was following some impersonalist path. And like, so.
No, you should not encourage them to do what they're doing. You should encourage them to come to a higher platform. You commit an offense to God if you encourage them to do that. But of course, you have to be specific what they're doing if you want the proper answer. But no. Srila Prabhupada, where did Srila Prabhupada ever encourage someone to be an impersonalist? Show me one example. Impossible to find it. And you happen to be his representative. You are in his line. You are not in the Draupadi Sampradaya. Draupadi Devi Dasi Sampradaya. You are in Prabhupada Sampradaya, Lord Chaitanya Sampradaya. Huh? So people who were impersonalists, Prabhupada would explain to them the truth, but he didn't necessarily tell them, you have to give it up or you cannot come to the temple. He would speak the truth, but he was tolerant and he encouraged everyone. But he spoke the truth. All right, you're doing this. That's all right. But you take prasad. You're doing this and this. That's all right, but chant Hare Krishna. You're doing this and this. That's all right, but buy this book. That you can do. But not that you say, oh, this is very good. Yes, you are very good. So nice that you're a Mayavadi. So nice that you're envious of the Supreme Bhagavan. Just be my friend, that's all. Not like that. Do you understand the difference? So let's say, yeah, all right, you are like this, all right. I can't, but do this also. That you can do. But don't encourage them to do it. You can tolerate them doing it, but don't encourage them to do it. There is a difference. You have no right. Srila Prabhupada ki.